afternoon. Welcome to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Justin Bourne. Coming up in a couple of moments, Kari Saric will stop by, Flames analyst, former NHL defenseman. We'll get on the Calgary Flames page and what they're up, what they've been up to, and what's on the horizon with the Calgary squad. Also, Keith Jones will stop by from the NHL and NBC tonight on Sportsnet. Pregame at 7:30. Puck drops just after 8 o'clock. It's the Boston Bruins and the Philadelphia Flyers. Jones, he's always full value, and we'll get you all caught up. Meanwhile, guys, a couple of bits of big news this morning. And listen, Brian, you've sat in this chair before. You know what it's like putting together international teams. Doug Armstrong named the general manager for the 2022 Canadian men's hockey team. The leadership, or management group, rather, also does include Ron Francis, Ken Holland, Roberto Luongo, Don Sweeney, and Scott Salmon. Your thoughts on Doug Armstrong's big decisions that he has a year to make now. How do you put this together, Berkey?
First off, I just sent Doug a note congratulating him. It's quite a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like people, we work in hockey, and I have 32 years with teams, and the highlights, some of the biggest highlights of my career were being involved in international hockey. It's a great, especially where, like Doug, I wasn't a good enough player to ever play for my country. I was never asked. It wasn't like it was an option. All right, so I never played for my country. I would have, but when they ask you to represent them internationally, it's quite an honor. And so good for Doug. He's been involved with Hockey Canada before. There's a lesson here for young GMs. Get involved with your country as soon as you can, the first chance you get. And it doesn't have to be as a GM. You could be assistant GM or player personnel guy, whatever. But certainly I felt in 2010 when we won the silver medal that we were competitive, but that Canada had the best team in the tournament. And I think they have felt that way all along. I think it's getting harder now. I think the U.S. is getting better. Mm-hmm. I think some of the other countries are getting better. I think it used to be Canada should win the gold. Now Canada might win the gold.
It's a good way of putting it. Doug Armstrong, Justin, named the general manager for the 2022 Canadian Olympic team. I know, you know, a cynic might look at this and say, wow, picking an all-star team, that can't be that difficult. But there's some tough decisions on the horizon here for Doug Armstrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually like to hear Brian's take on that part of it, of like worrying about the reputation, or sorry, the relationships with the guys you don't pick. You know, we saw how the Martin St. Louis thing played out with Steve Yzerman in Tampa Bay, and you know, there can be drama. These are highly desired, sought after spots and roles, and anyone, you know, Doug Armstrong included, is fortunate and I'm sure very grateful to have them. But I imagine some pressure comes with that, eh, Berkey? Some of the relationships with the boys. You don't make the team?
Yeah, if I worried about stuff like that, it would have been a problem. I think Justin makes a good point. First off, the selection process itself. So I was the GM in 2010 for the U.S. Olympic team, but they asked me to be the GM of the 2009 World Championship team to get to know some of the players and to kind of cement my place. And I said, well, how do we? Because I was a GM in 1993 when I was in Hartford. And I said, well, how do we pick the team? How does this work? And they said, well, you pick the team with your assistant GM. I'm like, let's get more talented people involved. So we brought all the American GMs in, or most of them, on a committee. So Dean Lombardi got involved. Dale Tallon, who's naturalized, got involved. Stan Bowman got involved. And that we got Paul Holmgren, got all the top U.S. hockey minds around one table. And that's mm-hmm. how we picked the Olympic team. And that's how they've picked it ever since. And that's how they're going to do it this time, too.
It does have to, further to Justin's point, it does have to be challenging whether, you know, and he brought up the Martin St. Louis point with Steve Yzerman. I don't know how awkward it is, and maybe it depends on your relationship with the player, but telling someone like Ryan O'Reilly, there's no room for you here on this bus. Or even, you know, going back to Alex Pietrangelo of the now Vegas Golden Knights, now, you know, formerly of the St. Louis Blues, where they weren't able to come to a deal to keep him in St. Louis, welcoming him aboard. Like, you always wonder about the dynamics at play here. And I know everyone publicly says, you know, everyone understands the situation, everyone puts on their big boy pants, etc., and there you can't worry about hurt feelings. But inevitably, when you're going to name a team like this, there's going to be some noses out of joint, Berkey.
Yeah, and I don't think you can worry about those things. Like, really, it's like, who, did you never get cut from a team growing up? I remember getting cut when I was 16.
Sure I did.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my dad picked me up after a tryout. I got cut from the A team. Mm-hmm. And my dad had absolutely no pity on me at all. It was kind of like, hey, they got better. They pick players they think are better than you. It doesn't matter what you think.
It's really not that complicated, is
no,
it, Berkey?
It's not. And that's why I hate participation medals and all that. Part of moving up the ladder in life is getting cut. It's getting fired. I've been fired enough. I'm an expert on it. So yeah. To me, I wouldn't worry about that. I'd say to the players, look, I'm picking the 20 guys that give us the best chance to get on a podium. The rest of you can get lost. It's that simple for me. And if a player didn't see it that way, I'd say, look, I said, I put my reputation, my chance to win a medal. I picked you to not make this team, and I bet on that team to make me look good and win a medal, and I was wrong. So, you know, I didn't take the right group, or I was right. Like, everyone laughed at us when we went in 2010. Everyone laughed. You're taking Chris Drury? You know, you're taking Timmy Gleason? What's the matter with you? This is what people were asking. And I said, I'm taking Chris Drury because he's Chris Drury. And we won a silver medal, and I was right. I took the right group.
Yeah. You guys are one shot away from the gold medal. I think for Canadian hockey fans, you always look at, you know, your chance to watch someone play with someone else. And listen, Justin, for the longest time, Canadian hockey fans have been denied seeing Connor McDavid play with Sidney Crosby. This is the chance, right?
Yeah. This is it. You know what my thought as we're talking about this is for Canadian hockey is, like, can something go right for Steven Stamkos? That's the thing I want to see. I understand he won a Stanley Cup, but he played 3 minutes of that last year. It just feels like
what a highlight.
Yeah. You know, I feel like he's had some horrible breaks. I hope he finds a way to be a part of it and be an important part of it. But yes, yeah. McDavid and Crosby, my Lord, would that be a lot of fun. You'd sure love to see if they got to load up down a goal in the final minute, what guys like that could do together.
Certainly. Okay, let's turn our attention back to the NHL. And tough loss for the Calgary Flames against the Winnipeg Jets last night. 3-2 is the final. They'll play Winnipeg again on Thursday to complete that three-game set. Corey Sarris joins us, former NHL defenseman, now Flames analyst. Corey, how are you today? Thanks for doing this.
I'm doing well. How are all you guys?
We're well. You know, but before we get into the Calgary Flames, we're just having a conversation, and, you know, Brian was talking about his own career, both as a player and then as a manager, about cutting people, about cutting players. How many times in your career, you know, minor hockey all the way up, were you ever cut from a team?
It definitely happened. I was actually pretty fortunate with a Team Saskatchewan that got to a gold medal final and beat Alberta. World Juniors, I was expecting to be cut there, and it didn't happen. But for me, probably the most, the toughest year of my career was as a 14-year-old. I almost packed it in. I grew up playing in Nowheresville, Saskatchewan, and usually we only had about three or four defensemen so you're guaranteed to play, and for some reason that year we got paired up with another small town near us, and we had six or seven defensemen, and I rode Pine all year. Coach hated me, never played, and I guess that's not the same as being cut, but yeah, it was a new experience for me, but it was one that helped with my determination. It was one that pissed me off, and you know, if you channel that energy the right way, getting cut, getting benched, it can sometimes do wonders.
It is true, and you know, so many athletes talk about it. You're going to go one or two ways on that. You're going to wilt or you're going to bloom. You're going to be defiant or you're going to go home. And you know, the great ones have, you know, faced that and had that hurdle to jump over, and I guess that's what goes into the makeup of elite-level athletes that make it to the NHL. And with that, I want to dovetail into the Calgary Flames. I don't know about you, Corey, but I thought that Johnny Gaudreau was going to tie that game last night in the dying moments on that shot, and a really nice toe save by Laurent Boisois last night. Let's start by talking about Johnny Gaudreau. Have you seen enough to say that he is back?
I think offensively, yeah, he's feeling pretty good out there on the ice. He looks confident. He's been very decisive with the puck early in games. He's made points just in the last few games to put pucks on net. He knows when he's going to make a play and when he's going to shoot. He knew he was shooting that puck last night, which I think was the right decision. You have to give Brassois a lot of credit last night. He shut the door on the Flames. He made the saves he had to make in the third period. But back to Johnny, I was hard on him the other day on the radio just because of his overall effort throughout the game. I think offensively he's clicking, and if he can just apply himself a little bit more on puck retrieval, on his back pressure, I mean, the way his season has been trending so far, he could be a pivotal player for the Flames. I keep wanting to see growth in those other areas of the game.
No one could talk about Johnny Gaudreau from this side, Corey, better than Brian Burke, so I'll turn the recreation over to him. Berkey.
Hey, Corey, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
Talk to us about the defense pairing of Noah Hanifin and Chris Tanev. They're pretty special so far.
Yeah, it's as we talked earlier this year around here, everyone thought it would be a Tanev-Giordano pairing. And to have him and Hanifin playing together, it's been quite complimentary. I think Hanifin has had the confidence to jump in and make some plays, knowing that Tanev is there. Tanev has actually had the ability to do the same. You know, he just about potted one again last night with a really nice chance in tight. They've really keyed off of each other well. Puck movement has been great. I've been impressed with Hanifin as far as just his maturity this year in picking his spots, and he's kind of been a defense-first focus, which has always been the knock on his game. Offensively, he's gifted. He can skate. He can score. But it's been a well-rounded game. And last night, now finally in what the Flames' eight or ninth game, you saw one hiccup from those guys. They ended up getting tangled up. My coaches used to not get frustrated with that. If a defense pairing was too close and you got beat, stuff happens. If a defense pair is too wide and you're getting smoked through the middle, we've got problems. So an unfortunate goal against those guys last night, but, man, they've been fun to watch.
Corey, where do you see this team from an offensive standpoint? You know, they've got a number of guys who can put the puck in the net, but just looking at the raw numbers, they're not having a ton of success on the offensive side of the puck. Is that something you expect to come for this group, or do you think it's just a team that's going to have to keep more pucks out of their net to win games?
Yeah, that's a tough one. They seem to be getting the bulk of their scoring from the same group, which they have the last couple years. That third line, fourth line, pitching in, it just, I don't know if they've got the assets there. We're watching Josh Levo. He's getting more opportunity, but he's working himself back off of quite an injury from last year. Michael Backlund is a guy to me so far this year. He has not been quite at the top of his game, neither defensively nor offensively, and we saw some big numbers from him just a couple of years ago. So I don't know if they have the offensive firepower. I don't know if that's going to be something that they need to go out and get. And even a guy like Lindholm, who started off hot early, has cooled off a little bit. So, again, for me, this team, when they have success, they're focused in their own end, which then translates to more time in the other end, and they manufacture the goals that they need. So this is not a team that can get loose defensively. I think they were in the first period last night. I think they were missing some of those words like desperation, intensity in their own end, and it ultimately, that game was over in a span of minutes.
With Corey Sarich, Calgary Flames analyst, former NHL defenseman. Corey, have you ever scored a goal the likes of which we saw Chris Tanev on Monday?
No, I barely scored goals. So
that makes two of us.
If I was to score, you'd think if I was to score a goal, it would probably look something like that.
So. But you know, it's funny because we see these every now and then, and I always say something to myself. Like, I understand like the nature of the dump in and what the F1's got to do and how you retrieve and all these types of things. I always wonder, like, from a goalie's point of view, because it's a hot potato when it lands at the top of the crease. Goalie doesn't know where it's going. I've always wondered why, and maybe there's an easy explanation for it, why more players don't just flip pucks towards goaltenders. Just knowing that bounce is so crazy town.
And you think it's actually not a bad play as far as puck retrieval. If guys guys know that you're doing it, and you have some forwards bearing in there too. It's, you know, maybe not that bad of a play. I guess the problem is, well, from where Tanev threw that puck in, you start missing the net, you're back in your own end.
Yep.
So it's a little bit of a catch-22, but I liked Kelly Rudy's analysis the other night on that goal. He said Hellebuck should have been a little bit higher.
Yeah,
out in the
he's
crease.
Way deep. He's way deep.
I know it's something that's easy to look at in hindsight because that it happens so rarely. For Hellebuck, he could say, "Yeah, sure, I'm there," but probably the next time it happens, whoever it happens on, the goalie will be in the same position because you just don't expect that stuff to happen.
Absolutely, Berkey.
Who could forget Vesa Toskala? Remember that goal?
Was it Rob Davison that scored that one?
I don't know.
It was an Islanders game.
I had my head
in
an air sickness bag. What'd you
remember that one?
How about ask you a question, Corey, about Dylan Dubé? Like he's really made a difference on this team.
He has. He's a guy that's added a little more grit to their lineup. Kind of a little bit more in the likes of a Matthew Tkachuk. He's a guy that he's got offensive talent, and it's been slowly, you know, emerging in his game. When he first came in, he was trying to keep it super simple, trying to earn his spot, trying to not make those mistakes. But now you see confidence in his game where he's going out and he's trying to be impactful. He's trying to be impactful physically and offensively. He's trying new things, so it's great to see. I think he's a fun guy to watch, and I think they could almost use one more guy like that in their lineup, a guy that's got some offensive ability, a guy that can bring some physical play. You look at a guy like Josh Anderson in Montreal this year. I think these guys are vital to the team. I know that Dubé isn't as big of a presence, but I think he's going to have that ability down the road to put a lot of pucks in the net and be a leader on a team and lead the right way through example and on at all ends of the ice.
Corey, what are your thoughts on the Sam Bennett situation? What's going on there in Calgary?
Well, I don't know, but I think that's just another little distraction that you probably need to sort out. Two games ago, Sam put forth his best effort. Last night, again, there was a few flames that just were maybe not as good as they should have been. I don't think he did anything negative last night, Sam, but there's a few guys, you kind of just didn't notice them out there, period. So for me with Sam, I said the other day, I he's got a lot of experience. He's shown that he can show up during playoff time, but it's a long ways to get to the playoffs, and you need a guy that's there consistently. Has he been given enough opportunity in an offensive role? Has he been given too much of a opportunity at the third, fourth line role? Has he lost his offensive touch? Does he have to completely change as a player? These are all the questions that I guess he still hasn't answered for us, but those are questions that still linger. And I mean, you get to this point in the guy's career, I think he still has great value. I hope for him personally that someday it all comes together. I just feel that it might not be in a Flames jersey. I feel like patience may have grown thin here, and you can't have a disgruntled player out on the ice. I don't think Sam would ever be the guy to go the route of Pierre-Luc Dubois and what we saw out of his efforts. But if a guy's not completely focused and he's got lingering issues in his head, it's hard to play hockey that way. I've experienced that myself when there's doubt because you don't have the backing of maybe your coach or you're at odds with the team. It's difficult to go out there and be a very focused player.
How high up the lineup could you see Sam Bennett playing? Like if there are, you know, sort of players above him that, you know, that won't allow him to move up into these spots, the question becomes how high up the lineup will his talent take him? Like, what's the ceiling for this guy?
I really think if he's willing to apply himself, he should be a third-line guy. I think he could be a second-line guy if the offense starts clicking. But there's nothing wrong with either of those. It's just the application. You have to have the mindset as a player to change. to go out and do it, to recognize that this is your role now. I mean, I know this is hard to believe, but back in junior, I used to actually get to play on the power play. I used to get a few things. Mm-hmm. Once I realized I got to junior and I couldn't I couldn't skating with these players was going to be the most difficult thing. I was going to have to be one step ahead mentally. I was going to have to be physical. I was going to have to concentrate on my end of the ice. Well, you just have to accept that and go about it if you want to stay in this league, if you want to contribute. And there's nothing wrong in that. You need players in different roles. But for me, the ceiling for Sam Bennett right now would be a second line if he was given some time to try to figure that offense out again. But has it been buried for too long? Is that still the best part of his game? I don't know.
Let me conclude on this one, because we've talked about on this program and elsewhere the nature of the hard-hitting defenseman. And in a lot of ways, that one little bit of a defenseman's, like, you have to be more selective than ever, given how fast the game is now. And listen, we can all remember your hit on Taylor Hall, for example. I think that, you know, you mentioned the Western League, the hit on Quinn Hancock is one for the ages. How do you play physical in today's game, in your estimation, Corey?
I think obviously you nailed it. Like the hard hitting, the big hits, you really have to be sure of yourself. And with the speed of today's forwards and the fact that they're just so skilled. The Sedin twins used to drive me nuts. I'm like, why can't we just run over these guys and take them out of a game? They don't do it. They don't put themselves in those positions. They're smart hockey players, and the league is filled with them. I think there's still opportunities, though, because of the lack of physical contact, where you could really deliver a doozy out there. For me, being the part that goes away from me, or that bothers me the most, is just the lack of hard physical play and the use of body. There's so many one-on-ones on the ice and two-on-twos where guys are stick-checking and looking at the puck, body position in front of the net that is gone. I was watching the Senators game last night, and I can't remember who the defenseman was. It was a one-on-one in open ice, which is not easy, but there was not even a thought of being physical on the forward, and it was Puljujärvi who all of a sudden now is a highlight reel goal. Those are the ones that are just, they drive me nuts this day and age, when all it takes is simple little getting in the guy's road and application, but yet we have highlight reel goals. Now, maybe I didn't get to play in this era, but maybe it's a little more difficult, but I don't know. Stare at the chest, skate backwards, don't look at the puck. Those were just facets of a defenseman's game that I think are kind of, they're missing right now.
It's rare that we see it. Corey, this has been a lot of fun. Great insight. Always appreciate it. We'll look forward to catching up with you here back on the radio station again soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
There he is, Corey Sarich, Flames analyst. Flames dropped one last night to the Winnipeg Jets. One more game in this three set. Berkey, I want to get your thoughts on Sam Bennett, because you've talked about him a number of different times here on television, elsewhere. How does this play out? How do you think the Sam Bennett situation plays itself out in Calgary?
Well, first off, I think Sam will handle it professionally. He's a great kid. And I don't think you're going to have any moping or pouting or lack of effort. I don't think that's going to be a problem. I think Sam only knows how to play one way, and that's with the pedal right down to the floor. So that's number one. Number two, they're not going to do this in a hurry. I talked to Brad Treliving about it. He said, look, I don't care if he wants to be traded. The same exact mentality I would have is, okay, you signed a contract with us, and now you're telling me I don't want to play here? That's your problem, not our problem right yet. So we'll take our time and see if there's something that's a fit. And I guarantee you a number of teams have weighed in on this immediately and made good offers because he's a quality player. The other thing he does, though, I worry about their team in the playoffs without Sam Bennett, because Sam amps it up in the playoffs. He plays better.
Big
he scores
time.
More points, and he's a Viking. Like, he's a mean guy. He likes to fight. He likes to hit. He adds an element. It's like Darnell Nurse. Darnell Nurse in the playoffs, to me, is always a bigger factor than he is in the regular season. Sam, people are nervous about Sam.
What do you think, Borny? Sam Bennett, the future there.
Well, it's an interesting situation. You know, I liked Corey's point that he does all those things in the postseason, but, like, you're not promised to get there, you know? Although, to his further point, Sam is not likely to go as PLD did and just shut it off in the interim. So, yeah, it's a tough situation. I don't envy GMs having to deal with that stuff, but, you know, it sounds like there's some resolve there in Calgary's end to not just give him away. So you just wonder, like, because of the quarantine and the weird year, is the market really down to, like, six teams? Like, is anyone going to trade for the guy and sit him for 2 weeks?
Well, that's the interesting part about this. And that's an interesting point that that Justin brings up here, Brian. I don't know that you want to deal with a Canadian team when you're dealing with someone like Sam Bennett. But if you're sending him to a U.S. team and you're looking for a player back, well, right away, you're not using that guy for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think it depends, too. I know that they're going through this with in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But provincial authorities, I think, waived the 14-day quarantine. It's just the federal government wouldn't. That's the information I had yesterday. So with testing and a private jet, I think there's a way around that possibly. But, yeah, it might be 14 days. Sam Bennett's a good player. If you're going to get Sam Bennett, you're willing to give up an asset, and Calgary would wait 14 days if they have to get the guy to play.
I remember
I wouldn't stand by leave your phone on at night to wait to get news of this trade, guys. I think it's going to take a while.
I remember, speaking of Sam Bennett, that draft, and that was the Philadelphia draft. I was talking to one scout and said, you know, when you look at how hard this guy plays and how hard he goes to the net, you know, I wonder if there are injury concerns. One scout, I can't remember what team it was, and he stopped me and he said, you realize that there are 31 general managers that wish all their players played like that, right? That went to the net as hard. Like, ignore the injury concerns. Like, if you can get a player to play as hard as Sam Bennett, you cherish it. You're not scared of it.
And he can play center and wing, too. He's a good face-off guy. He kills penalties. He's a useful player.
Saw tons of that in junior with Kingston. Absolutely. He was like, he would go to the net as hard as Taylor Hall did on the wing in Windsor, but he was a middleman. It was spectacular to watch. We'll hit a break. Keith Jones on the other side tonight on Sportsnet on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. It is the Boston Bruins and the Philadelphia Flyers. We'll talk to Jonesy about both those squads when this program returns. It's Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday at noon. It's Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Justin Bourne. Keith Jones, our friend from the NHL on NBC, joins us. Tonight, it is the Boston Bruins facing off against the Philadelphia Flyers. The Bruins have been an intriguing team of late. Monday was a fascinating game. Down 3-0, they end up beating the Washington Capitals. And the Philadelphia Flyers, despite benching stars and coach complaints, have won 4 games in a row. Keith Jones here to break it down. Keith, thanks so much for stopping by. Which of these two teams tonight is more intriguing for you right now?
It's still the Flyers, just based upon the fact, as you just mentioned, they haven't played particularly well, and they still find ways to win games. And I think when you have a coach like Alain Vigneault, you have a benefit that he recognizes within a game who's going and who's not, and he'll play those guys that are moving their feet and making things happen a little bit more as the game progresses. And I think that has really benefited the Flyers and given them chances to win the games that they've been involved in. The good news is they've found ways. The bad news is they need some other players to pick it up. And collectively, they're a better team than they've performed so far, but their record is outstanding. That's all good news.
Berkey.
Hey, Jonesy, thanks for joining us.
Happy to, buddy. Always great to catch up with you guys.
How are your miniature donkeys doing? Everyone should know that Jonesy raises miniature donkeys.
You know, they're not enjoying life right now because there's about 6 to 8 inches of snow in the field, and I had to walk out and throw some hay down for them and make sure that they're okay in their sheltered huts that they live in out there. But it's cold, and the weather's not very good around here, but you guys are used to that where you're from.
Yeah, no. How long did you hold your breath when Nolan Patrick got hit the other night?
Yeah, that's a scary moment. You know, after the amount of time that he's missed and all the migraine issues and some of the mysteries surrounding that injury, it was a scary moment. And you know, I think you and I were texting at the same time as it was right after it happened, and it was an unfortunate play. It was not a dirty play. from Pulock. And when you have a player like Nolan Patrick that missed an extended period of time, I think everybody holds their breath that's associated with the Flyers and really fans of hockey as a second overall pick going back just a few years ago. And the upside potential is high, but he is still trying to work his way back to the same level that he played at prior to being injured.
Jonesy, just looking at the Flyers team so far this year, they've got a lot of guys putting up a lot of points, including some of the older guys. The one that catches my eye is JVR. JVR's got 5 goals and 8 assists for 13 points so far this season. What has led to his resurgence?
It's really interesting, Jason. His best game was a game that he didn't pick up a point in, and Vino was praising him after. It was a game against the Sabres. The Sabres had blown the Flyers out the previous night, and the next day was a very important game for them, and Brian Elliott was in net and played well, but JVR was their best player. And it wasn't about scoring in that game or picking up an assist. It was about playing physically. He was knocked down a couple of times. He jumped back up and was quick to get back into play and did a lot on the forecheck, which was something the Flyers had been lacking in the blowout loss the game before. Some of the praise that Alain Vigneault put on JVR is praise that you don't often hear about him, and a lot of it was about his work ethic and moving his feet and being a key contributor to their victory, even though the point production wasn't there. Well, the points have come, obviously, a lot more recently, including a 4-assist game and their previous win. He's not necessarily known as a passer, but he can move the puck. Most importantly, he's great at deflecting pucks. And on the power play, I think he's already picked up 4 power play goals, and I believe all 4 of them were on deflection. So he's one of the best in the game at getting position in front, not getting knocked down, and using that great hand-eye coordination, as Leaf fans will remember from his time in Toronto.
You know, that's an interesting. I wanted to get them. I'm glad Justin brought that up, because I wanted to get to James Van Riemsdyk. And I'm curious, Jonesy, how Alain Vigneault arrived at scratching Travis Konecny when he probably had a handful of candidates to get healthy scratched over the weekend, and James Van Riemsdyk might have been one of them?
Yeah, James normally would have been on that list, but not this year because of the way he's competed. And for Travis, I think it was just, he knows how important Travis Konecny is to the team. It's almost a sideways compliment to Travis that the upside is way more than what he was providing, and he was still scoring goals. I think he already had 5 at that time. So a little reset for a younger player that they know they're going to need to play at an all-star type level. And he's capable of doing that. But when Travis drifts, he needs to be straightened out. And I think a lot of us as young players needed that, whether we believed it at the time or not. Maturity comes into play, and having a coach that's been around and has experience in bringing players to another level, I think it's the message is received a little bit better from the player. And Konecny played better in the next game than when he re-entered the lineup, but still hasn't played as well as he can. And as I said, I believe it's a compliment to a player that is going to be relied on heavily by this team as the season moves along.
Brian.
Yeah, if I'm the GM, we have a pretty good argument about that. That's how players were treated when I played. You have one bad game, you sit out. I've never understood it. What chance do I have to rectify those mistakes if I'm in the press box? So I would have had a real long discussion with AV about that one, but we'll take your explanation for it. How about the special teams in Philly, Jonesy?
They've got a lot of potential, and the fact that their penalty kill is still hanging in there without Sean Couturier is something that really stands out to me. Block shots have been a real important part of it. Guys like Michael Roffel and Scott Laughton have really stepped up and done a really good job in that department. Phil Myers is a really good defenseman, guys. I don't know how this guy went undrafted. He is going to be an extremely important piece of the puzzle, especially in the absence of Matt Niskanen. And it looks like he's ready and willing to take on that responsibility in all situations, including on the power play, where he's got a pretty good shot from the point, but he has great quickness. He's an excellent skater, and puck retrieval is something he excels at. So I think there's a bunch of guys by committee that have done a very good job in both departments. The veterans have been very good on the power play. including JBR, who we mentioned. Jake Voracek and Claude Giroux also have picked up their play, and Provorov is their steadiest player at both ends of the ice. And all of that is being done with one of their, in my eyes, really their most important player, Sean Couturier, not being available right now.
I got to tell you a quick story about JVR. Sorry, Jeff, for jumping
in.
Yeah,
do it.
So when I traded JVR to got him from Philly, Luke Shen went the other way, and the draft was in Pittsburgh that day. And Luke Shen was very popular. There were a couple thousand fans that drove down to Pittsburgh to the draft from Toronto. And Paul Holmgren said, let's do this today. I said, no, I don't want to get booed. So we did it. I did it from my Ford Expedition driving back to Toronto with Dave Nonis. We made the trade on the freeway on the way back because I didn't have the guts to do it there.
That's great.
Well, it was a good trade for you because Luke had his issues in Philly, but was a great guy and a very good teammate and had a chance to play with his brother there in Braden.
Yeah, it worked out very well for us. I hated trading Luke. I took Luke to Afghanistan with me the one summer where I said, if you want to do this stuff and be special to the soldiers, you got to get some sand in your shoes. So I took him over to Afghanistan with me. He's a great kid. I still keep in touch with him.
Jonesy, the one thing that I kind of get confused about what to make of the Flyers this year is I look at their record and they're 7-2-1 and currently in first in their division, and then I go on Twitter and I see some of their fans just concerned and pulling their hair out over this group. I mean, Carter Hart's only a .900 save percentage. They're only +4 in the goal differential. What are they?
Well, they're the opposite of what analytics would tell you. I could tell you that.
Yeah.
It's not been pretty. It has not been pretty, but it's been effective, and they've got results and had some late goals, and they bend, but they don't break, and all of those things are important, but they have not played anywhere near the way they played prior to the stoppage last year. And I didn't think they played as well as they were capable of when the playoffs rolled around either. So I think that's the challenge for Alain Vigneault, is to get them back to the game that they showed just prior to the pause. And that was a game where they outworked the opponent. That was a game where they outscored them in the third periods frequently. And that's a type of game where they controlled the pace of play. And that is not the game that they've played yet. So the question marks around are legitimate, and the fans' reactions are intelligent ones, because that's visually what you've been seeing. The only thing that's been different is the score has not told the story. So I don't know what you take of that. I think if you're Berkey and you're a GM, you're happy you're winning, but you're still got your eyes wide open to see exactly what you can do, maybe to make your team better. And maybe you're worried that the absence of Matt Niskanen is changing some of the complexion of the team based upon the situations that he was used in. And having a right-handed veteran shooting defenseman is always a big benefit and a tough hole to fill.
I'm glad you mentioned Philip Myers there a couple of seconds ago. To me, it's one of my favorite stories in the NHL, and you're right. Never drafted. You look back now, and that raises eyebrows. Was cut from Calgary's camp when he went. The Philadelphia Flyers had an injury at their camp. Myers was available, so sort of went on a, you know, pardon the pun, went on a flyer to go to Philadelphia camp, ends up getting a contract out of it, goes back to junior hockey in the Q, playing for Ruan Noranda, never drafted. He's got a contract before, you know, one of his D partners, Jeremy Lozon of the Boston Bruins, doesn't have a contract after getting drafted in the second round. And all of a sudden, Myers, to your point, is one of the most important defensemen, with all deflection there, of course, to Ivan Provorov, on this Flyers blue line. It's a great story.
It is, and he's a great kid, and he's a big, tall, I think he's about 6'5", and he shoots right-handed. Every team in the league wants a guy like that. You have Pulock with the Islanders, who obviously has developed into a star defenseman. Pelech, his partner, has done the same, and Myers is going to be in the same category as those two guys, and they're top defensemen. I think they're underrated in the way they play as well, but that's where Myers is projected to get to, and he's way ahead of schedule, and he is that much more important because he is their best right-handed shooting defenseman, and he's going to see his minutes continue to escalate, and the fact that he's defending as well as he's playing on the offense is what's really most impressive to me, and it's just a ramp that this guy's been going up. I mean, he's got this there's no headwinds in front of him. It's been tailwinds, and he is just pushing, and getting better all the time.
I went and watched him play in Belleville when he was playing for Lehigh Valley. And I remember talking to Scott Gordon after the game, or before the game, and I said, who should I watch? You know, you always ask the coach, because sometimes you don't watch the right guys, you don't pay attention. He said, you got to watch this Myers kid. He's going to be a stud. And I watched him closely, and you're right, 6'5", right shot, really, really good skater for a big man. He's like, how did we all miss this kid? It's not like he's inconspicuous. He's 6'5".
Yeah, it's incredible. And then you think to, you know, a first-round pick in Sam Moran, who was the same as far as height, but a couple inches taller, and then unfortunately had a bunch of knee surgeries, injuries and surgeries that have really slowed his development. He's still around. You know, he cleared waivers already. He is a big, tough kid, but his career's kind of gone in a different direction, and injuries are a big part of that. But Myers has just obviously been a great find to replace the minutes that they were hoping in the future that would be Sam Moran's.
Josie, who's the best team in the East Division with the Capitals and Bruins right there with the Flyers?
The Capitals are the best, but yeah, they got a little wake-up call with the Bruins the other night. The Bruins, on paper, don't look as good because their blue line has a lot of not necessarily names that jump off the page. Lauzon is one of them, who Jeff just mentioned, who's turning into a really valuable part of their blue line. And they're tough, but so are the Capitals. I thought Frederick's fight the other night was just awesome against Wilson. It had a lot to do with the Bruins coming back. I mean,
yep,
when you have guys come up that, you know, the college and can fight like that, that's a big plus. So the Bruins are a smart hockey team led by great, you know, stars. But I still like the Caps a little bit better, and I like the addition of Chara there, the former Bruin.
You know, we'll end on this one. Your point about Trent Frederick's a really good one. I don't know many, Keith, if any, players who knock on Tom Wilson's door. But that's exactly what Trent Frederick did. Like, two games in a row, ask Tom Wilson to fight. Who does that in the NHL, Jonesy?
It's a short list, I can tell you that. And I've watched Wilson play a lot, and there's not many. One guy that did was Chara. And without him being there, I just can't tell you how important it is and how much it lifts up a bench when a player does that and is a very capable fighter. It's still part of the game to me, and I think it's more important this year than ever because of the division setup where you're playing the same teams back-to-back and over and over and over again. Having the ability to look down your bench or on the ice and see one of your teammates that is capable of going up against a guy like Tom Wilson, I think it just serves such a benefit to everybody that's in your uniform.
And he's playing wing now, but he's a center. Who knows about the future with David Krejci? This guy's going to probably move up the pecking order. Like, I'm with you on Trent Frederick. This guy hits on a lot of levels for the Boston Bruins. We're out of time. Keith, this has always been a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun talking to you, rather. We always appreciate it. We look forward to catching up again, and enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy it. Take care, guys.
There he is, Keith Jones. The great Keith Jones breaking down the Boston Bruins and the Philadelphia Flyers. You can watch that one tonight, pregame at 7:30, puck drops after 8 o'clock. It is the Boston Bruins and the Philadelphia Flyers. Two teams that we've enjoyed watching each other mix with each other going back to the 70s when they competed for the Stanley Cup. We'll hit a break, wrap up Hockey Central here in a couple of moments. We have an announcement from the New York Rangers and the PWHPA. We'll share that with you when Hockey Central returns. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. A couple of moments left in the show here, but this news breaking about 20 minutes ago, Brian and Justin, the PWHPA Professional Women's Hockey Players Association and a partnership with the NHL's New York Rangers will see Madison Square Garden host a game on February the 28th at 7 p.m., the first NHL team to host a PWHPA game. Brian, you've been a longtime backer of the women's game. What do you make of this news?
Anything that advances a women's game is great news. It's typical Rangers. They're progressive. And it's great news. The NHL has to get involved in a larger role. It's not because they're not willing to. It's because of the politics of the situation. But we all have to get behind this. I said this before. If every sport had progressed as rapidly as women's hockey in the last 20 years, mm-hmm. Usain Bolt would run a six-second 100 meter. It's unbelievable. You go into a rink and you're watching elite women play, and mm-hmm. if you squint a little bit so you can't see the ponytails, you think it's guys. You think it's men playing. They are so much fun to watch. And I hate people who say, oh, I support women's hockey. Then how come when I go to a Furies game, there's 50 people there? If you support it, show up.
This is big news. Justin, PWHPA will play a game. And I'm assuming this is all going to be U.S.-based athletes, given all the quarantining and border issues. So we'll see if the Canadian women get a game in. But the Rangers, the first NHL team to host a PWHPA game. And, like, is this the beginning of a domino sequence here that leads to the, dare I say, WNHL? Justin?
Yeah, well, you sure hope so. It would be nice for the women. It would be nice for those of us who would like to follow more to establish some clarity, you know, to have a real clear a league. And obviously COVID has not helped things, but I think in a year or two, everything should look a lot better and brighter for the women's game. And this is just another one of those bright spots along the way to getting there.
And I'm pretty sure the Leafs hosted the women's game. I don't think this is the first time it's been done. I think Richard Petty did it.
More on this later on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. We'll try to get Jayna Hefford to sit down with us later on tonight. Smith and Jones next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.